Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Thank you so much for sharing this time with us here on the program. As we come your way on Sundays at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m., we stream live at richarddugan.com and newspress.com, and we archive these programs at richarddugan.com, the radio shows page. So we have lots of opportunity for you to listen to this program, both on the radio, but also online at the website, and you can get all kinds of good information in that regard. Today, we're going to talk with a returning guest. I'm glad that he's back with us to kind of update us on what he's been up to, as well as his latest work. And his name is Lee McCormick. And Lee, thanks so much for joining us again.
Oh, it's great to be here, man. Like talking to friends again.
I feel the same way. That's what I love about this program. You make lots of friends over the years, and we've been doing this for over 7 years, and it's been a joy, to say the very least. You have, of course, lots of wonderfully intriguing types of activities going on around the world, and especially down in Central America, South America, and so forth. But one of the things that I found rather fascinating, especially about your latest work, and we're going to talk about the Spirit Recovery Medicine Bag. It's a transformational guide for living happy, joyous, and free. And you've co-written this with Mary Faulkner. One of the things that I seem to have struggled with in my life is connecting with the indigenous peoples, specifically of North America. I was born and raised in Phoenix, Arizona, of course, surrounded by Indian reservations and, of course, numerous people that I associated with were Native American and so forth. But for some reason, and I've been kind of looking at this more and more, I never was really able to connect with the traditions, with the rituals, with the medicine, with the stories and those types of things. Because, I don't know, maybe there's this feeling I had inside that I don't have a right to connect. Because I'm technically a white man. And and you are too, so you've made that connection. You have bridged, you've crossed that bridge, as it were. I'd like to hear a little bit from you on how, to start with, on how we can feel comfortable doing this kind of work, being involved with these kinds of folks. And they're beautiful people, and the rituals and traditions and ceremony. I love that aspect of Indian tradition. And of course, medicine bag is not the medicine bag in particular is not exclusive, but it certainly is rather a big part of that. Can you share with us a little bit of your insights into your connection?
Yeah, sure. Well, you know, when my journey really began, my journey of figuring out who am I really, you know, my recovery story started, checked myself into the treatment center, and really began to question and look at my life and, you know, what's really real for me and what's really true for me, you know, which meant that I was questioning the beliefs that I've been raised with. I was questioning this culture, you know, in the United States, the dominant culture of the U.S. I was kind of questioning everything. And in the course of living that and living with that, I was asking all the time, praying all the time, you know, to spirit, to God, whatever it is that's out there, just asking for help and asking for a way to reconnect. Because I had a sense, I think, my whole life, you know, looking back on it later, I really had a sense that there was something profound missing. There was something not there, and I knew it was missing, and I didn't know what it was that was missing. And it became really compelling, of course, in early recovery for me because, you know, in early recovery, we let go of our medicators. We let go of the patterns and the behaviors that we've used to keep ourselves distracted or entertained or medicated as such. So, you know, I had this big empty space in my life, and I was more aware for the first time in many, many years, you know, of all the feelings and all the all the ideas and all the thoughts and all the incongruence, and then all the magic and all the mystery and all the compelling nature of life. Because, you know, when we live in a shroud as such, under an addiction or with an addiction or in any kind of compulsive behavior, even a lot of times I think we shroud ourselves in our roles and our stories of who we are and all that. When we come out from under that shroud, everything changes, you know, not just the issues you're addressing. The whole nature of our reality changes. And through my prayers and through my asking for help, I met a guy, and this is in my story, the first half of the Spirit Recovery Medicine Back book. I met a Diné man, a Navajo guy. And actually, he was over at my house a couple nights ago. And when I met Albert, his name is Albert Sombrero, and he's from Tucson. When I met Albert, he invited me to come to a sweat lodge in Tucson. I met him at a workshop in Tennessee. And, you know, he was just a guy to me. I mean, I was always also interested in Native traditions and, you know, in tribal peoples. I think it was the tribalness. And actually, that is an aspect of what I think I missed in life. I had some awareness of our tribal nature. And it doesn't mean, in, you know, Native American. It just means we humans are tribal beings by nature. And our culture is the opposite of that. You know, this modern man, all-American culture these days, it's every man for himself to such a ruthless extent. But I met Albert, and he invited me to a sweat lodge. And I went, I flew to Tucson, I got in that lodge, and I was the only Anglo guy in there. Not that that matters, because it doesn't, as far as I'm concerned. And I had no idea what I had got myself into. I had no expectations. I really had no idea. You know, but the compelling aspect of it is that I was not there to be a part of his tradition. I was there for the sake of reconnecting to my own heart and soul and spirit. And so that's what I was praying for, and that's what I was asking for. And I just had a huge experience. And that's what I found in traditions that I've done a lot of ceremony with a lot of different peoples, you know, a lot of different traditions over the years. And the thread that's constant to me is our individual, irrevocable connection to consciousness and spirit and light and life. And this entire creation we live in is alive and it's conscious. The whole natural world is alive. It's a living, breathing being. And the native peoples and the indigenous cultures have recognized that and always recognized that. That was the heart of their world and their reality was, you know, this tapestry of life that we're all a part of. And modern man has moved way over, you know, the opposite direction from that, like, you know, man is what matters, and man is the top of the food chain, and the world was created to serve man, which is just self-indulgent, ridiculous perspective, in my opinion. You know, but the Native people and their traditions, they hold a thread back through time, and there's a thread through their legacies and through the spirits of their peoples, you know, that they're all connected to. Well, the thread that I was seeking out was not their thread, but my own personal thread. You know, what is there for me? And that's what I asked for, and that's the response that I got. You know, it was between me and God, or between me and the spirit people. It was between me and the fire, and me and the wind. It wasn't between me and the native people. It was between me and the spirit people.
I can relate to the sweat lodge story. I've only experienced it once, and unfortunately, I was not able to last. I actually had to leave midpoint, and of course, they were very gentle about all of it. There was no shame or any of that nature, but at least I could say that I had that experience, and that I was allowed to participate in that. In terms of, I think that your perspective, I think, is very, very valid for all of us, especially I'm sure that I'm not alone in my feelings in regards to, I'm not Native American, so I don't have any right to, you know, I feel like I would be imposing or intruding, that type of thing. But when mm-hmm. when you're invited, when you are said, "Hey, come on, check this out, see what you think," you know, it's much more comfortable in that regard. But there is that step that you just described, that it wasn't about your connecting per se, or be embraced by the Native Americans or any of that. It was about you and you. And that's really what it comes down to, regardless of what we're talking about. And especially when we start talking about this aspect of a medicine bag. Now, there are a lot of people who actually carry a medicine bag around with them. What's the significance of a medicine bag?
Again, I think that, you know, there are versions of medicine bags all over the place. There's all kind of versions of medicine bags. You know, a lot of people will wear what they'll call a medicine bag, like a little pouch around their neck. You know, that'll have some kind of herbs or some kind of power objects or something that they have a connection to. And so, of course, for each individual, that's dependent on what's in their medicine bag and what their story is, what their connection is, what their medicine is. The version of medicine bag that's represented in our book developed through work that I did in Mexico and work that I did with Miguel Ruiz years ago. Miguel developed a whole process that he called the MESAS and medicine bag work. And then when I started going to Peru and working with the Quero people and the curanderas and the healers in Peru, they also use what they call a MESA, which a MESA bag on the cover of our Spirit Recovery Medicine Bag book, that cloth medicine bag that's on the cover is actually my MESA. And what the medicine bag that's characterized or presented in our book is literally a bag that each inside that bag there are tokens, and each token represents a different aspect of our life, a different relationship in our life. Because this medicine bag focus, and it does evolve over time, this medicine bag focus is based in our reconnection to our integrity, to being very clear and grounded and focused and aware, you know, of the power that we hold and the responsibility and the nature of how we hold and live in relation to the different aspects of our life. So what I'm saying is, for instance, in my medicine bag, I would have a token. The first one would be me. So I'd find something to put in the medicine bag that represents my relationship to me. For me, in my medicine bag, it's a 10 peso coin. Mm-hmm. You know, and then I would have an object that represents my relationship, for instance, to my wife. I would have one that represents my relationship to maybe my career, to my work. I might have one that represents my relationship to God or to spirit, whatever my version of that is. And the point being that you identify the primary relationships that make up the focus, the majority of the focus of your life. You give that energy and that power to those tokens, and then you put them in the medicine bag, you fold it up, and you carry that medicine bag the way you carry your life. You really tend to it, and you take care of it. And you take it out, you know, 2-3 times a week, or whenever you feel compelled to need to do so. But in the practice, I would recommend you take it out at least twice a week, and you sit down in a place that's quiet, you open the medicine bag, you take all the tokens out, and one by one you pick up a token and you hold it in your hand and you really connect to the energy of that relationship as it is right then, right there. So how am I in my relationship with my wife? What's going on? How do I feel? What's up with that relationship? What do I need to own that I may not be really taking responsibility for? What do I need to let go of? You know, what needs more attention? You know, what do I need to do maybe in just minding my own business and not pushing myself on her? You know, it's just a check-in an internal check-in on the nature of how each of our relationships that make up our life, how it feels inside of us, and to really take responsibility for that. And when we bring our focus to each of those tokens one at a time, we're literally breathing life into that relationship, and we're giving it love, and we're giving it respect, and we're giving it attention in a very focused ceremonial way, or even a sacred way, you could say, you know, because I'm honoring these aspects of my life, and I'm taking the time out to really sit with it. And that's not something that we do culturally. You know, we kind of bounce around, we live by a lot of assumptions. But how often do you really sit down and focus into the relationships that make up the frame of your life? You know, and come to terms with what's really going on there, what needs to be changed, what needs more love or more energy, what needs to be healed. You know, what do you need to let go of? There may be some relationships that honestly you know in your heart, your soul, you really need to just let it go. And so the work of letting it go might begin. So it's a continuously moving, evolving practice that just brings us present in our life.
Well, I'm going to basically tie in a couple of other words I would like for us to talk about. It's the Spirit Recovery Medicine Book. That's the title of the book by Lee McCormick and Mary Faulkner. And it's a transformational guide for living happy, joyous, and free. And it is available to you. And we'll give out a website and all of the other pertinent information as we continue here on the program. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. Lee, let me ask you, spirit recovery. I don't know why, but for some reason, many years ago, I used to think that the spirit and I've heard that there's a difference between our spirit and our soul. We won't go down that road, but nonetheless, what is it that seems to happen to our spirit that then we come to this place where, as you've described in this book, we seem to need recovery from?
Well, actually, I would reframe that.
Okay.
I think we need recovery to our spirit again. You know, in my experience, in my life, I was so wrapped up and lost in the matrix of my roles, my relationships, my fears, my need to be good enough, my craziness, you know, my story, just all of the stuff that we get spinning around us in the course of life.
Yeah.
And, you know, and we're trying to be good enough, and we're working to be successful, and we're trying to keep other people happy, and we're trying to keep ourselves in balance. And it's just like, you know, by the time you're an adult and you're out in the world and you've got all this stuff going on, it's like you're trying to juggle 50 balls.
Mm-hmm.
At one time. And so our attention gets so scattered and we get spread so thin. And, you know, not to mention the fact that, you know, each of us, when we're born into this world, we inherit the legacy of our family. We inherit the legacy of our culture. We inherit all of these unresolved issues and experiences that keep getting passed on from generation to generation. You know, all the fear and the neglect and the abuse and the trauma of humanity that just keeps being passed forward. And, you know, so we inherit messes that are not our doing, but they were here waiting for us when we got here. Then we get wounded, and then we get brokenhearted. And that's going on the inside, and then on the outside, we're back to juggling all those balls and trying to be good enough and trying to fit in and trying to make a living, and, you know, and it's just overwhelming. What in the course of all that, we really lose our connection to ourselves, to our truth, to our heart, to our spirit. You know, we don't have time to really focus on what's really in my heart of hearts. Not the emotional heart, not the I'm in love with you baby heart, but the real true heart of connection to the one that created us. I believe my story is that in the center of my being, my spirit dwells there, and my spirit is an extension of the one that created all of us. So, you know, we are all related in that regard. We're all an expression of the source, of God. And, you know, we lose ourselves in the world, and we lose our connection to our own authenticity and our own heart and spirit. We're not taught. We don't have it mirrored for us. You know, we're not directed in our culture to live connected to our heart and spirit. We're taught to live connected to our ego and our reason and our mind, and that life's about figuring it out, you know? And so we live in this great, you better figure it out matrix. And it's just overwhelming.
To say the very least, I have to say that I took a trip just recently, and it wasn't anything really profound per se, but it was a really good trip. It was a very short trip, less than 24 hours. I took a train. First time I'd ever taken the train. It was really a lot of fun in that regard. But I took a train down to meet a friend of mine down in Los Angeles to go watch a Los Angeles Dodgers baseball game, and I love the game of baseball. I have no definitive team to root for. I enjoy the game. And then the next afternoon, I took the train back. It was literally less than a 24-hour trip. And yet it was quite profound. It was a great deal of fun and joy, and enjoyment, and felt really good doing it. Taking that time away, disconnecting as much as possible from what's going on in the world, in spite of the fact that, I mean, you go to Los Angeles, you're not getting that far away, but it's different. At least probably the biggest key for me. It was different.
Oh yeah.
I live up above Santa Barbara, up on the mountain, and in a rural area, which is wonderful. Live in the wilderness, surrounded by oak trees and animals. Our dogs tend to bark at night because the coyotes are going through, especially with all the dryness that we have here. And so I'm definitely well connected in that regard to nature. Have a great deal of respect for her, and you know, I want to see her flourish in more ways than one. And one of the things that struck me, and I started thinking about this, and so I posed this question to you, had to do with mentors. Those people who lift us up, help us through those trying times in our lives, who teach us, who guide us, who support us, and sometimes even chastise us, call us on our stuff, as they say. Who yeah. are your mentors?
Oh, wow. I've had some great mentors over the years. You know, if I go back, I mean, my dad was a great mentor to me, but of course, you know, a lot of us, my dad could tell me some things, and then there were a lot of times he was the last person I was going to really listen to. You know what? It's interesting because, of course, you know, later on in life, my dad it's almost like he's more of a mentor to me today, and he's been dead since 1984 than he was when he was alive. Because I remember things that he said and ways that he was, and, you know, I actually think he's around. So he was one. You know, I had a therapist early on that was a really great mentor to me, because the guy just kept telling me that I had to decide who I was going to be, and who I was going to be could not determine that, you know, basing it on other people, that I had to come to terms with my truth. And I had to live from my integrity. And that's pretty unique for a therapist working with someone in recovery, you know, to tell you that this is not about drinking the Kool-Aid and joining the club. This is about authenticity. And then I spent 3 years working with Don Miguel Ruiz, and Miguel was an amazing mentor to me. You know, and I've always had a great respect for great teachers. You know, Joan Borsenko, who is just one of the most gifted, most talented, beautiful, amazing people I've met in my life. You know, Joan has been a mentor to me because she balances my craziness, you know, with her wisdom and her, and you know, mentoring is incredibly important. And again, I'm really glad you brought it up because that's something in our society that's not really acknowledged. In tribal cultures, you know, the whole tribe, the adults mentor the kids. And we don't have that in our culture. It's like, in our culture, it's all about chasing the external and accomplishing and earning and making it happen. Like, you got to earn enough brownie points to have value. And that's just so, like, we don't have the inherent value just by the fact that the Creator saw it fit to allow us to be here. You know?
Yeah.
It's like, it's just insane that there is no inherent value in our being human. Our value is only determined by our place in the world. That's just perverse to me. But I've had great mentors, and mentoring is an incredibly important part of the recovery programs that I've created. Our Integrative Life Center in Nashville. I have a recovery program now in downtown Nashville called the Integrative Life Center, and mentoring is a big part of that program. You know, it's not therapy. It's not, you know, it's just focused on who are you really and what do you want to do with your life and how is it that you're making the decisions that you're making. Now, those are things that all of us can benefit from. And I have I have Sweat Lodge brothers that, you know, that I do ceremony with and have for years. And I don't know, man, you know, my life's evolved to where I have a circle of people and friends that I respect, and we're all just very open, and we don't have any secrets. And so you know, the more we unravel, and I think the healthier and the more balanced we get, the less secrets you have. So, you know, it's kind of like you're mentored by your friends because you're all reflections of each other.
Yeah, the whole issue of secrets brings up the thought of everybody's concern over privacy now, you know, and I use this statement specifically when I hear the stories about one country is pitted up against another, and I say, look, if you have no secrets to keep, then you have no secrets to keep, and.
Yeah.
That is true at that level, but also on a relationship level, on a one-on-one level. And I had a men's group back in 93, and we used to go hiking, and we used to sit and talk about our foibles in our relationships. And as a matter of fact, I was the only guy at the time who was not divorced. The other two guys, and it was basically just a triad of the three of us. But it was great fun, and the things that we did. I'd have to say that our ritual was going hiking every weekend, rain or shine, and it was even more fun when it was raining, because even though we would wear the rain gear, it didn't matter, because once you were soaked to the skin, you couldn't get any more soaked. We weren't concerned because it was warm enough to where we weren't concerned about, you know, catching cold or anything of that nature. But it was like you couldn't get any closer to nature by being soaked to the skin by the rains that were coming down, finding a dry place under a rock or in a cave or something to start a little fire, to have a little meal and just sit and talk, and then hike back through the mud and across a stream that, when you walked by it once, it was shin high, and now it's thigh high as you're going home. And it was quite fun, those challenging times. And of course, that was a men's group, but there are women mentors, and you mentioned one in particular. I have one of mine back in Phoenix. She is an acting coach. I took some acting classes from her when I was there. I've known her since 1979, my first radio job, and I still stay in touch with her just to get insights from her and chat and just kind of catch up and how her life is going. And she likes to hear how I'm doing and succeeding. And I remember you mentioned your father. My father's still alive. He's 83 now, and yet I still refer to him quite often on these programs. And I tell people, well, my dad, you know, said to me this, and he said that, and I've kind of adhered to a lot of the things that he said. Not because he was my father and I'm supposed to obey him, because it was, but because it was a smart, it was a wise thing that he said that made sense to me.
Yeah.
I've tried to mentor. When I owned a home back in Phoenix and there were kids there and I refurbished this basketball pole and put up a backboard and I put the Phoenix Suns logo on it and everything. And I told the guys, I says, this is not a competitive court here. We're here to have fun. We're here to enjoy ourselves. Okay. We can play a game, but we're not going to be, you know, banging heads and what have you. And they seemed to get that. And I really enjoyed that experience. It was as if I felt like I was getting through to them that there are other ways of being instead of constantly competing and constantly, again, like you said before, you know, striving to get to the top of that hill.
That imaginary hill.
That's it right there, that imaginary hill. Doesn't exist. And I really felt good about that. And that was I was saddened by the fact that that had to come to an end because one morning I came out and somebody had literally pulled the rim down off of the backboard. It was a fiberglass backboard. And I said, that's it. I can't fix this. And I don't even want to. If that's the level of respect that somebody has, then I just can't. It took the wind out of my sails is what it did.
Yeah.
And yet, regardless of that, we keep on sailing. We have to keep moving forward. So when you are traveling through on your journey, as you have been over these many years, as we all have, you come across something that really seems to work for you. Tell me how the medicine bag works for you.
Well, it works in one sense in that I just stop, you know, I disengage, I pull all my attention back from the world, and I sit down and I reflect on what matters to me, what really matters to me. As I hold the token that represents each of the relationships that are in my medicine bag, as I hold that token, I'm really sitting with myself. And I'm giving myself and my life the respect and the time and the attention to honor it. You know, how often do you stop and honor yourself and reflect on where you're at in your life and what exists in your life? You know, the things that exist in my life because I say so. The people that are in my life are there because I choose to react and or respond to them. I choose to interact with them. The job, the work that I do exists because I show up for it. You know, the journey that I've lived in my life, the things that continue on with me are things that I've chosen intentionally to give energy to. You know, I've let a lot of things go over the course of my life. Because I realized there was no point in carrying it anymore, so I did what was necessary to energetically really let it go. So you know, the medicine bag is an opportunity to really sit with yourself and honor your life, and give yourself the respect and the time to just be there. You know, again, we just live in a frenzied culture, mm-hmm. and it's just go, 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 go all the time. Well, I don't, like, what's the end game to that? Honestly,
yeah.
what's the end game? Where's if you stopped and you sat down and you said, okay, wait a minute, okay, here I am today. Let's look at the last 5 years. What's gone on over the last 3 years, and where I'm at today, and then really, what's the end game for the next 3 years or the next 5 years? There's so many things that we do and so many, we get caught up in this frantic kind of busyness that there is no end game. And, you know, it's up to us to enjoy our life. It's up to us to make our life, our individual life of value. If I don't value my time and my attention in my life, And I certainly don't have any business complaining about what, you know, the state I'm in and the space that I'm in.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe we're worthy of that respect and of that value. I believe it begins with us. If I don't value myself, then I don't really value anyone else. Not really.
Yeah. Yeah. Very interesting. A couple of things have come to mind in my upbringing as a Catholic and working for a Christian radio station. I used to hear messages about how loathsome we were. I mean, we had no value. I mean, we were like worms on the ground. And that didn't make sense to me because if the story, as I say, the story is true about the sacrifice, why in the world would a creator sacrifice for something that had no value? That made absolutely no sense to me whatsoever. And that was when I started to turn that around and saying, if the story of the sacrifice is true, then I have more value than any of the biggest diamonds on the planet, or anything else for that matter, because of the sacrifice.
And you know
what I'm saying?
No, I do.
And
I agree with you.
Yeah. And that turned things around in a big way for me. And I started to drift away from some of these old stories. But nonetheless, they certainly served a purpose in terms of teaching me the value that I had, both to society. But it also raises, you address something that actually has raised a question I've been asking people. And I ask this in a very gentle way, because I know that it can perturb some folks. We see, you talked about how the world is today. It's just this craziness. And I even ask in terms of whether you want to talk about the economic structure, what have you, what in the world the end game is. Well, from what I have been able to surmise, there is no end game.
No, there's not.
And so I agree with you that we have value. But at the same time, I question whether humanity has the right, let alone does it deserve the right, to continue on. What in the world have we actually accomplished as a species that shows that we, like any of the other animals on the planet, have earned the right to continue on as a species?
Well, I would say I don't know that it even has anything to do with the right. I think it's more like, you know, from one point of view, humans are animals. We are an animal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and life is cause and effect. Life is action-reaction. And, you know, as far as I can tell, there is no guarantee that humanity has to live on Earth. It's not like we can't go extinct as, you know, thousands or millions of other species have. You know, look at the evolution of man. I mean, there's no more Neanderthals or Cro-Magnon man running around on the planet. You know, I don't know. I mean, that's a big question. I have this deep feeling or awareness that we humans have allowed ourselves and our ability to create reality the way that we do. We've allowed ourselves to be completely hijacked by our mind, by what we call the reason.
Mm-hmm.
And we've taken off down this rabbit hole of belief and projection and fear and manipulation and reaction, and we just have lost the thread to reflection and respect and relationship to the rest of creation. You know, and we'll come back full circle to the indigenous people. I've had the privilege of spending time with the Caro people in the Andes, and I've been with Caro people. They live up at 16,000 feet in the Andes. They live with no modern stuff. And their culture, their people, they didn't even know that the Europeans, the government of Peru and the rest of the world didn't even know these people existed until the 1940s. they have never stopped living in relationship to the wind and the spirit people and the rain and the natural world. All of it is alive to them. All of it is conscious. And they have interactions and conversations with the aspects of creation that we completely take for granted. And they can, those Caro priests can call the wind and the wind will come. They can call the rain and the rain will come. They can call the spirit of the earth. They can call the mother. And your feet and your legs will start tingling like you're standing on a hot plate. Mm. I mean, it's, we have so disconnected ourselves from the fabric of creation, and it's just tragic. And we've, you know, we've replaced it with modern conveniences and, you know, cars and video games and money and just this whole matrix of stuff that we just, it's just crazy. It's like the humans have gone insane. And now humanity is living in this made-up dream. And I say it's a dream because here's my thing. We humans dream a reality. That would be the culture of the United States as one snapshot. Okay, it's a dream because if none of us showed up for work, if everyone stayed home for the next 30 days in the United States, the entire structure of what we call reality would completely collapse. Right? The mm-hmm. whole thing would
yeah,
completely collapse.
Exactly.
So how real is it? How real is it? It's not actually real at all. It's like the Shakespeare saying of all the world's a stage.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it is a stage, and it only operates because we say so. It's our creation. Every one of us is participating in feeding this creation. You know, we're not victims of it. We're the perpetrators of it.
Yeah.
You know, we're the originators of it. We feed it. We carry it forward. We pass it on to our children. Well, if there's some aspects of it that are not working, it's up to us and only us to be responsible enough to clean those things that are not working, to heal the issues that we've inherited, because we're not defined by our issues. Our issues don't define what we are.
Mm-hmm.
And to heal ourselves and to let that stuff go. And that's the spirit recovery journey, you know. It's
yeah.
We're continuously evolving and moving forward. Well, are we cleaning those things, those inheritances, those issues? Are we taking responsibility for them, healing them, cleaning them, and then letting it go? You know, the Israelis and the Palestinians have been killing each other forever. There's no end game.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not that that couldn't be dealt with and healed and let go of.
Yeah.
Excuse me.
Well, I tell you that it's extraordinary, and we're going to talk more about this as we continue talking with Lee McCormick and his book, Spirit Recovery Medicine Bag. And we're going to do that in just a moment. We'll be back in just a moment on Tell Me Your Story. Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm talking with Lee McCormick, co-author along with Mary Faulkner of Spirit Recovery Medicine Bag, a transformational guide to living happy, joyous, and free. And Lee, before we took our break earlier, you were talking, of course, a lot about what's going on around the world and some of the things that are happening. It's a frustration for many of us because, you know, we'd like to see some of these things come to an end. You know, we'd like to see everybody thrive and not just survive. And I think that's one of the keys that we're talking about on this program is finding those ways in which we can do just that. We can thrive. We can live joyously, and as you say in the subtitle of the book, living happy, joyous, and free. Speaking of which, one of the things that I found interesting is that, for example, in our own Constitution, in the I believe it's the preamble where it makes a reference to seeking out life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. We can have life, we can have liberty, but we can't have happiness. We can pursue it, but we can't have it. I thought that was a rather interesting way of looking at it, and at the same time, maybe there is a way for us to have that. Your thoughts in regards to living a life that's full and we're thriving and we have all of those wonderful things that life has to offer, and that then we get to turn around and give that to the rest of the world and make this place just an unbelievable place, a joyous place.
Well, you know, if you remember my the project that I met you over, the Dreaming Heaven.
Yes.
You know, the film and the book. You know, the premise of Dreaming Heaven is that we have been given heaven in this world, and we've virtually made hell out of it.
Yeah.
You know, and heaven hasn't gone anywhere. Our opportunity to live at peace hasn't gone anywhere. We just choose to live in chaos, and we're not aware of it. Maybe we are, maybe we aren't. You know, it's hard to speak to the big picture
mm-hmm.
without just coming back to each of us as individuals and the choices that each of us are making, the beliefs that we're giving our faith to, the actions that we're taking in our day-to-day life. And it just seems to me that it keeps coming back to the simple things, to the little things. You know, how do I talk to myself? How do I treat myself? You know, how do I eat? Am I eating, you know, good, fresh food? Do I respect my body in that way? Do I respect myself in that way? You know, do I do the little things to honor myself and to give myself the kind of respect that I would like to have from others? And that's what the Spirit Recovery Medicine Bag is about, is really offering people an opportunity to reconnect, you know, reconnect to the sunrise in the morning. Get out of bed, you know, before sunup, and just try it for a week. Get up every morning before sunrise and go sit outside and listen to the world come alive. Listen to the birds start singing. Listen to life, you know, pick up in motion. Or make a commitment to go watch the sunset. Living in Santa Barbara, you got a perfect place to do that, you know? And we all have places and ways and things that we can do to change the structure and the pattern of our life, to break out of our patterns and our habits, and to re-experience life just simply by changing our patterns and our habits. And that in itself can be inspiring. That in itself can get our attention. But you know what? Life is happening around me all the time. And life is continuously presenting us with opportunities. But it's up to us. We have to step up. You know, we have to be the one that makes the choice and the decision to open ourselves up, to look at new possibilities and new opportunities, to own our reality, to own our reality in this moment, to own the things that I've done in the past that I may not be proud of, and to, you know, to address that, to take responsibility for it, but then let it go. Stop dragging the baggage around. You know, and treat yourself the way you would like other people to treat you. It's just, I think the solution to our issues these days is going to be found in simplicity. It's not going to be found in more complexity. It's going to be found by just slowing down and, you know, just chill out.
I couldn't agree with you more in that respect. I couldn't agree with you more. It's something I continually am learning to do. I know we all are continuing to try to make that our goal in life, to take things easier. And, you know, and again, some days it's easier than others. At least that's how it feels. You know, I have to catch myself sometimes because where I happen to work, we have a slogan that we operate by. And that slogan is that we are here to serve. And yet there are those days when I become so annoyed with everybody asking for something, and I sit there going, and where is mine, that, you know, it's hard to hide my annoyance of their request sometimes. I mean, it's like, okay, the last straw was just placed up there, and I can't take this anymore. You're going to have to just wait. And yet, you know, I can't do that because the slogan rings in my head. You're here to serve.
Yeah, well, but you have to serve yourself too.
Yeah,
that's the thing.
Yeah,
you know. I don't know, man. It's daunting. And what I do know is that when I got to a point in my life that I was just really sick and tired of, as they say in the recovery world, when I was sick and tired of being sick and tired, and when I really sincerely asked, you know, God, when I really asked for help, and I put some energy into it, and I got off my ass, and I took responsibility for my life,
mm-hmm.
And I asked to, you know, I asked for what I longed for in my heart, the answers came, man. The opportunities came. It was no joke. You know, I realized that I had to say yes to things that were not familiar to me. I had to say yes to get on that plane and fly to Arizona and go to that sweat lodge ceremony.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my reasoning mind had a million reasons why I had better things to do. You know, but my heart, I realized that there's a voice, and I know this now, you know, our heart has a voice that's far, runs far deeper and is far more aware as to my truth and my nature than any voice in my mind. You know, my mind's just kind of like this wild computer program that feeds on whatever frequency of information happens to be running through it at the moment. And my heart just stays in this steady place of groundedness. And, you know, it's taken me, I've been at it for years, cleaning myself and letting go of stuff and taking responsibility for where I'm at. You know,
yeah.
There's no resolution to our issues in ever blaming anyone else or ever expecting someone else to make it better.
Yeah.
That's just bogus.
Yeah.
You know?
I know I've gotten to the point early on in my career where, you know, when something went wrong, you know, I just said, hey, something went wrong. I was at the switch. So, you know, I take responsibility for that. And there is really a big difference, not only verbally, but also psychologically, when you take responsibility rather than taking the blame. And I think that also means that we have to view these events, I'll call them, of taking responsibility. We have to view them not as necessarily as mistakes or screw-ups or whatever other word like that you want to put on it. It's something that happened. You know, I'm doing the best that I can, or maybe I'm not. Maybe I just wasn't at 100% concentration at that particular moment. I own it. I take responsibility for it, and I will do everything I can to make sure it doesn't happen again. Because what I've noticed is that when we do the blaming, even if it's blaming of self, just the word blame, it just starts to, you end up having another issue you've got to deal with. Whereas when you take responsibility, I don't see that you have issues to deal with in that regard.
Well, you know, if we can move beyond judgment, then we can move into awareness.
Mm-hmm.
Judgment blocks awareness. The judgment of I'm right, he's wrong, doesn't matter which side of the equation you're on. The side of being right can be even more blinding than the side of being wrong. The truth is what's happening. It just is what it is. It's always cause and effect. It's action-reaction. And And the awareness offers us the opportunity to realize, okay, I did this, that happened. If that's not what my intent was, then what other scenario might I play out here? We just live and we learn. But our culture and the way we've been taught to live life is so enmeshed in this endless judgment, and the judgment keeps us trapped. It doesn't serve us. It really doesn't serve us.
Right.
So it's and the power and the gift in it is what you said. The power is in our willingness to be 100% responsible for our part in everything. And then if we can be in that 100% responsibility and let go of judgment, then we really begin to become broadly aware, and we can really learn to move through the world without fear. You know, we can learn to make decisions and make choices. And if it doesn't work out, if we're quote-unquote wrong, then you learn from it. You just don't do the same thing again.
Yeah.
The same way.
Exactly.
So what's the big deal?
Let me ask you, how important of how much value, significance, if you will, does your medicine bag have for you?
Oh, it has a lot of significance. It's the medicine bag. I'll say this: the medicine bag is a tool. We have so many tools available to us. The 12-step program in the recovery world, 12-step meetings are a tool. They're not a gospel. They're a tool. The medicine bag is a tool. The sweat lodge is a very multidimensional tool. Mm. There are so many things in life that offer us wisdom and offer us power or healing. And because we're so insecure in our own value and our own worth, we're prone to make sacred the tool when what's sacred is ourself. In our life, I'm sacred, you're sacred, your life is sacred. You know, our life is sacred. Our beliefs are not sacred. Our religions are not sacred. Our stories are not sacred. What's sacred in this world is life. And yet life seems to be so disrespected, and beliefs are held up as though beliefs, are the end game here.
Yeah.
My practice with the medicine bag is a tool that I love it. And there's an energy connected to it because I've practiced it for years and I've carried it with me. And I use it like a healing tool now. There's literally an energy in my medicine bag that I could put it on your heart right now and you could sit and breathe with it and you'd feel it. It moves all through you.
Mm.
Because we're incredibly powerful beings. Human beings are incredibly, we're far more powerful than we understand. And we're so misdirected because we have so disconnected from living with faith and respect for ourselves. You know, we've really, really had our faith in ourselves hijacked over the legacy and over the years of humanity. And spirit recovery is really about reclaiming faith in yourself first. And then through that self-discovery, we realize really how close we are and how irrevocably connected we are, to God and to Spirit and to the Source.
Well, I love the fact that through these programs, I feel a greater connection to each one of my guests and to you in particular, as we have shared this second interview together. I'm really thrilled that we've been able to spend the time. And before we do close out this program, I'll ask you, who is Lee McCormick?
I'm a guy who just loves living life in this world and loves sharing it, beginning with myself and my little family and then on out to all my friends and all my greater family scattered around the planet. Lee McCormick's a pretty simple guy who's just living a life. That's all.
And what is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you're doing now?
You know, I want to leave my legacy being a legacy of really a legacy of grace and of opportunity and of relationship to possibilities. You know, that when people think about me or people read about me or people interact with me, that they come away with a sense of, you know what, I can do what I want. I can live a great life. And I'm worth it. Each of us is worth it. We were created to live a great life.
Mm-hmm.
And we can get there if we're willing to do the work and heal our own heart and have faith in ourselves. We can get there.
And who inspires you?
Oh, well, my wife inspires me a great deal. You know, my wife is an author. Her name is Mee Tracy McCormick. She wrote a book called My Kitchen Cure. And my wife really inspires me. You know, my children inspire me. And really, the truth is, life inspires me. You know, just every day inspires me. I really enjoy being alive.
Hmm.
I'm not real happy with the overall state of humanity.
Right.
But I'm very inspired because there's so much to be done.
Yeah.
And it's a great thing.
Yeah. Well, and that's what we want to feature on this program is those who are doing those great things to make this world a better place. And I do look forward to the day when, yeah, maybe we can start talking about some of these trouble spots in the world and they're no longer trouble spots. And we can start coexisting together side by side. Lee McCormick, I want to thank you so much for sharing this hour with us and the program and your book, Spirit Recovery Medicine Bag, a transformational guide for living happy, joyous, and free. It's been great to have you back on the program. And as I offer this invitation to every one of my guests, whether I've made it publicly or not, if you ever find yourself in the Santa Barbara area, we'd love to have you in studio.
Oh, cool.
Absolutely. Okay. So if you're out here, let us know, and we'll sit down and we'll record another one.
All right, man, I'll do it. Well, you have a great evening and a great week, and we'll see you around.
Thank you very much. I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love to Lal.